Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who met his wife while training for the 400 meters in Seattle and is eating gluten-free while lusting after bread, Dave Denniston.
Hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston. Welcome back to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping doctors like you slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. Well, once again, we are doing another throwback episode from season one. This gentleman that we are going to be speaking with today, he is just a man that has a good heart. He's an ENT. He is performing all kinds of great surgeries at the University of Minnesota. And he's had this really great journey where he has served our country, both as a physician and as an officer. And it wasn't an easy path. As a matter of fact, what you'll learn is how he traded time instead of money, and how you could too, and how he built his first clinic. And then we're going to go on this journey of how he started in dentistry and moved to being a physician and then an ENT specialist. And I have to tell you, there's a hint here. It's not just because he loves learning. And lastly, we're going to talk about who is a great candidate for government debt reduction programs and who is not. And also, we're going to talk about the steep penalty if you don't serve your time. And then last of all, we're going to talk about the biggest life-changing advice that he gives regularly to residents. And with that, my friends, here is the show.
My name is Dave Denniston, and welcome to the latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Well, today we're going to chat about the unusual path that many physicians take, how the profession has changed, and what physicians can do outside of the exam and operating rooms to impact the world. Well, I have the distinct pleasure of hosting our guest today, Brigadier General David D. Hemlar. He is the Assistant Adjutant General of Air in the Minnesota National Guard. And besides his wonderful service to our country, he's also a physician performing craniofacial skull-based surgery and as a professor at the University of Minnesota. And he's had this amazing journey serving both our country as a physician and as an officer, but it has not been an easy path. He graduated from Tufts University in Boston with a Bachelor's of Science in Biology. He then attended the Howard University College of Dentistry as a National Health Service Corps scholarship recipient, gaining a commission as the equivalent of a naval rank of lieutenant. And here he was practicing dentistry in Columbus, Ohio. He ended up changing careers and entered medical school at the Ohio State University in 1985. Well, after completing his studies in 3 years, he spent his fourth year as a basic research scientist, and this led to a 1 year of postgraduate training in general surgery and 4 years in otolaryngology. I might be mispronouncing that. But finally, a fellowship he had in facial plastics and reconstructive surgery led him to Minnesota in 1994, where he attended the U of M here, and finally was a practicing physician. Well, welcome, General.
Thanks, Dave. Glad to be here.
Well, so tell us about yourself. You've had this incredible path, and I know quite a few physicians who restarted careers moving from one thing to another, but I've never met someone who's had this military service like you have. So tell us about your journey and this transition and the process from dental to military service to physician.
Well, something, two alibis. One is instead of otolaryngology, it's just ENT. That's what most folks will know me.
Oh.
That's one way of looking at it. And the other is that I'm a slow learner, so it takes a long time to get to point maybe where you want to be. But growing up, Dave, I had a father who was, number one, an advocate for education. and also an advocate for his children, who wanted them to have some benefits that maybe he didn't have. And one of those pathways to get there was through education. So education was very highly regarded in our household. So I never had a problem with that. In fact, probably had more fun than I should have along the way. So growing up, I was privileged to have great parents who knew the difference between right and wrong and what they wanted. And believe me, they were taskmasters. You know, it was one of those things that you didn't have any slippage in your studies or what you were told to do. So to me, that's all a good thing because I see where it gets you. But starting out, I had the privilege of having not only good parents, but I had good people around me. If anyone was going to make it in life, I was, and there were no excuses about that. All my siblings and I agree that they were the reason for our success. Now, the other end of that is I don't mind hard work. I don't think I've ever been the brightest guy in any of my classes or anything like that, but the one thing I will tell you that many of the advisors and mentors that I've been around, that no one's going to outwork me. So I've been blessed to have just limitless energy to pursue those goals that I go after.
And so you went to dentistry school, and why did you end up changing? You know, what prompted that change from dentistry to?
Well, my dad was a dentist, and I grew up early on being in the dental office doing odd jobs, and actually I think there was some child labor laws that were being scuttled, but at the same time, I grew up around dentistry, and I loved it. I loved working with my hands. I repaired cars later on in life, and not a lot of woodworking, but I was pretty good at that, too. So I love working with my hands, and dentistry is all about a vocation of working with your hands. Obviously, there's the medical/dental side of it where you're making decisions, and I felt I was pretty good at that. But having that background, dental school was a natural. In fact, I saw it as an opportunity to practice with my dad one day. So that was one of the reasons for going after it.
Wow. And then you end up making this career switch, and at the same time, you're serving in the military. So tell us about that. What inspired you? What motivated you to serve your country and the community? And can you tell us a little bit about how your service in the military has changed you?
Well, you know, I'm a little older, so I had a draft card. 1973, they cut the draft off, and I was a 1H. So 1H means that you're going to go at some point. In terms of accessibility to the city, a lot of the folks who came to that base would later settle into the city, and they were physicians, dentists. And so Columbus had the fortune of having a base that provided a ready workforce to the, especially to the African American community right there. And believe it or not, a lot of those guys who came to Lockbourne, if you look at the history, were Tuskegee Airmen. So from a military standpoint, having a father who's in the military and having Tuskegee Airmen around, it was a natural to gravitate towards something that would benefit yourself and your family down the line. Now, I didn't jump into the military after the draft passed me by right away. It wasn't until I went to dental school and needed to find a way to pay for dental school that I joined the service. Now, you can do that several ways. You can either go to a military school of service and provide your education and pay back that way, or they can pay you, and then you obligate yourself. And besides active duty service, there's one called the National Service Corps. National Service Corps is part of the Public Health Service. Public Health Service is sometimes you see you'll see a lithograph of some old guy, and it's C. Everett Koop, but some old guy who was part of the Public Health Service, and sure enough, their duties are to provide the citizenry of the CONUS, or what we say is the stateside in-garrison support for all the folks who can't receive normal care. And that was also to start off as sort of a providing of care for the seamen who come into certain ports, for the Native American population, and again, for those who just can't see their own, have the means to support themselves. So I joined that, and about 3 years later, I owed my time back, and I served it stateside originally. It was going to be at a indigent care area in L.A. The money got taken away from there, and then I had to write a grant. And I wrote a grant to service a small community in southern Ohio called Chillicothe. So that's where I built my first clinic, and it was funded by the federal government, and it provided care to all those in that area who didn't otherwise have access to care. And that was during dental school. That was during and after dental school. And then, you know, just to keep on, I changed careers. You asked me why I changed careers, that sort of thing. I was sitting up in dental school, and there was a commonality between medical and dental school. A lot of schools are the same way. The first 2 years, the basic sciences, you learn basically the same thing. So I'm sitting up in pathology, a big lecture hall, 400 people, and I asked a question about lupus erythematosus. And the guy looks at me and he says, "Are you dental or are you medical?" I said, "Dental." He says, "You don't need to know." So those kind of challenges spurred me on. And long story short, I went back to medical school.
Wow. So I know that the NHSC still has a number of different scholarships available that physicians can take advantage of when they are coming into or out of residency. And I think one of the biggest issues many med students face is this huge burden of debt. And I've seen many residents and fellows, they have over $300,000 of debt. That is a nice size house right there. And I've heard that service to our country through the military or perhaps through these kind of programs like NHSC can be a way to eliminate or at least reduce the debt. Can you tell us more? You alluded to this a little bit earlier, how military service works with this. So you said it could be on the front end or the back end.
Yeah, there's several avenues. I was in dental school in Washington, D.C., and there's no better place than to find out who the mover and shakers are just by going to a cocktail party or who provides what type of service. So you have the regular uniform services, Air Force, Army, and Navy. Marines use Navy personnel for their medical, so you can wrap the Marines up in there. And all of them have hospitals that are here stateside and have teaching programs assigned to them. Not all of them have medical schools. So when you say teaching programs, those are the residencies. Now, the one hospital that still has a teaching program is USHU, so it's Uniformed Military Hospitals, and it's actually in Bethesda. And so the old Walter Reed used to be on Georgia Avenue. It's now part of Bethesda, and actually that's what Bethesda is called, is New Walter Reed, semantics. But anyway, you can apply to those schools, get in, and they pay for your entire education, but now you're obligated, in some cases, a year and a half to 2 years for each year you receive service. Most are actually a year for year, and you can't beat that when you talk about debt. Now, what's the obligation? Would you rather owe time or owe money? Now, again, I don't mind working hard, and I don't mind being a late learner or a late bloomer, but time was the way I considered the way for me to go. Now, you can take out loans, as you said, and I think I'm at the University of Minnesota, and I look at the debt, average debt of these guys and gals coming out, it's the $160,000 to $200,000. Now, you can defer that, through loan programs and everything else, but eventually you have to pay. Now, what's the benefit of military? I think it's just what you said. You get to serve your country. In fact, I'm an advocate of service to the country in some capacity once you reach the age of 18, but that's neither here nor there. The fact is that I think you learn a lot by becoming part of the fabric of this country, and there's no better way to do it than through the military. Now, with me, I guess the reason I chose National Service Corps is because that's the first one I ran into. That a gentleman told me the benefits of it. You receive all your tuition paid and a monthly stipend. So that allows you to at least, eat and be a normal person while struggling through school. So the back end of that is you owe the time. And when I was coming out, I had dreams of being in California. Those got dashed because the money was limited. This is 1981. And with limited funds, I think L.A. County had to withdraw funding for the clinic I was going to. And instead of paying, get this, if you don't serve your time back after, you know, receiving the funds, you pay close to seven times the amount that you owe. So they catch you that way as well. Now, I don't think most people can afford, and I'm sure, like you said, they're going to take out some lifelong loan to pay that. But anyway, I had the option of looking in some other areas to build and furnish a facility, and I did. So I was able to get through a year for a year. So from 1981 to 1983, I was a lieutenant in what was then the Public Health Service as a National Health Corps service dentist. After that, surprisingly, I got out, and I ran into an Air Force guy, one of these guys who was at Lockbourne Air Force Base in Columbus, Ohio, and he had all these aircraft on his wall, and it was indeed a retired colonel from the Air Force who was in the National Guard. I had no idea what the National Guard was. Long story short, I joined the National Guard, and now some 30 years later, I've loved every bit of it.
So if you're talking to a person that's looking into being a medical student and they're considering these options, you know, what kind of person do you think would be good for military service and the back end of it, and what kind of person would not be good for that kind of commitment?
Well, you know, it's just like I'm on the admissions committee here at the University of Minnesota, and if you're going to be a physician and one of your goals is to make money or one of your goals is to be respected in the community, if those are your goals, you're not going to make it. I think service to the community is one thing that you have to want to do. Same way with the military. You can go in and say you want to achieve a certain rank, this is what you want to do, this is, you want to go fight in wars or whatever, you know, you want to fly aircraft, you want to pilot a sub, those kinds of things. But unless you want to really serve your country, you're not going to be satisfied, because there's always going to be roadblocks. There's going to be that hardship that you have. You see it every day, the boot camp, you know, the days without rest, being deployed somewhere you don't want to be, being separated from your family. Those things catch up to you. So if you really don't want to do those things, then, and you don't have a love of your country or that willing to serve, then you're not going to be successful. So that has to be to your innate nature, something quality deep within that you want to do, because, you know, there's other ways to make money nowadays, and probably a lot easier than spending, well, I think I spent 14 years after dentistry retraining, going through all the fellowships and everything until I started practice. That's 14 years of your life until I actually started what I was doing. So those are kind of folks I think do well in accepting a service obligation.
So it really sounds like someone that just has that dedication and love for people and is driven by those things.
Yeah, there's that quality, you know, to it. I mean, if you love money and that's what you're going for and you get it, then more power to you. But I just don't think it's the driving force that helped me along. And I know a lot of others who've gone that way. It's not the driving force that keeps you up at 3 o'clock in the morning studying a Krebs cycle that you're not going to understand 15 years later because you have to just do it through rote memory. So those are the kind of things that you have to endure.
Great advice. Well, besides all this work that you do, how you and I met was at a Lions Club meeting here in Bloomington about a month or two ago, and I was surprised that you were involved because I haven't met many docs that are involved with Lions Club or those sorts of service organizations. So tell us about that. You know, how have you found the time? What led you to be involved in Lions Club and other service organizations?
Well, Lions has been very beneficial to the University of Minnesota, specifically the Department of Ophthalmology, which is one floor above us here. I'm in Phillips Wagenstein right now. And our department, the Department of Otolaryngology, ear, nose, and throat, Lions has provided obviously visual aids and the Lions Eye Bank. And for us, it's all been about hearing. Lions is a great support of ours in terms of hearing for those who can't hear, providing hearing aids, and of late, providing the impetus for our infant hearing screenings and in both the hospital and clinic settings. Those things provide just wonderful benefits to that population who does not able to see and not able to hear. Now, the way I got involved is that when I was early on here, I was working with the Lions audiogram audio group here, and it's just amazing. Guys and gals come from all over the state to see the benefit of all the dollars that they've given to the University of Minnesota. And we have plaques, we have photos, we have murals, we have everything here, at least in our clinic, to show our respect for the Lions and what the benefits that they provided. Now, at the same time, we were provided the option of joining Lions. I had been members of other service organizations, and I believe in that no matter what kind of time, if I can't put a lot of time in, then at least I can throw monetary support or some type of support there. And that's how I got involved, because we have a Lions Ambassadors Club right here within the university, specifically right here in the otolaryngology department.
Hmm. And I think of physicians, you know, it's like 40, 50 years ago, they weren't having to see patients every 10, 15 minutes. It wasn't the machine in the hospital setting that it is today. And it seems like at the time, being involved in service organizations like Lions, like Rotary, it was a requirement if you were a service provider like a physician and for other small businesses. So you want to talk a little bit about why do you think docs aren't involved today, and what would you say to other physicians that may be listening to this?
Well, you know, medicine's become corporate. You know, the fact that we have production, you used to go into medicine as an entrepreneur. And I remember growing up, you had, you know, docs' office, both physicians and dentists around the community. It's hard to find that anymore because, number one, the cost of setting up an office is so expensive, and then maintaining the office, you know, the malpractice insurance, all the things that are incumbent upon a businessman. And what happens is administrators come in and they do a good job of arranging the day-to-day practice, and it does free physicians up to care for patients. Now, at the same time, there become production numbers, and we joke around now here at the University and everywhere else, I'm just punching a clock. And literally, I feel like an employee because I have little say in what I can do now. So with that, meaning produce or, you know, you get your hand slapped, those kinds of things, then you don't have time to do what's needed.
Well, here's my personal prediction that I see coming is, yeah, it seems like the hospitals and the major practices have been gobbling up. And as we get into this scenario where we're talking about Medicare reimbursements and this pressure from the Affordable Care Act and whether or not docs want to take on certain patients, I personally foresee the entrepreneur coming back, where if you're an entrepreneur, you have far more pay possibilities than you do as a doc in a hospital. And I think being involved in these kind of service organizations, keeping connected to the community is a great way for people to find patients if they are that entrepreneur in the future, where you own part of a surgical center or you have some of these other revenue possibilities besides just being in practice. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and that's true. I have friends in Tennessee who, you know, he was an entrepreneur and he opened up a surgery center. Now, I would love for him to keep practicing and seeing patients, but, you know, he kind of took the soft world and kind of settled back and is making money now. I would like to, you know, if you are successful, then, you know, you want to use that and use your skills in other ways. Now, at the same time, it's funny you say that. When I was in Chillicothe and opened up a practice for indigent patients, if there were people who were seeing, you know, the paying clientele in that same city. Now, they were happy seeing their paying clientele. They never tapped into or saw the benefit to see a indigent or Medicaid population. You know, I went in, captured that entire population, and by doing good work, word got around. So I was starting to see all people in that community. Something my dad told me a long time ago, he said, everybody who's on welfare isn't always going to be on welfare. And that is true today as anything. Welfare is helping a hand up. And so once they succeeded on reestablishing themselves, those patients who I knew were in that predicament, they came back to me as paying customers, and their families did. So, you know, that's that entrepreneurial spirit in sort of a different way that you're going to see people in the community. And, again, it's somewhat service-related because now people are taking the opportunity either to see certain patients, certain populations, and is driven by reimbursement to an extent.
Very interesting. Well, I want you to turn gears a little bit on you, and we're just wrapping up here in the next few minutes. I want you to imagine you're sitting across from a table. You're talking to a resident. They're finishing up their residency. What advice would you give them?
I actually do that every day. So we have a residency. We have four residents who graduate every year. And for my money, obviously we're pushing them toward an academic bend because we need more researchers out there. We need more discovery. And we need the people who we recruited 4 years, well, 5 years prior to fulfill those obligations because you don't get to touch everybody who comes into the field. So that's my first thing. I actually push an academic bend to it. Now, you got to take care of your family. A lot of them have families now. You got to take care of your wishes and desires. Now, that could be private practice. That could be everything. But the goal of it is to do what you love. Because if you're doing what you love, and I do, you wouldn't work a day in your life. And I feel that way, even up to this time after 23 years in practice, 30 years in the military. I love what I do. So that's my first thing. If you're doing what you love to do, you will be successful. And you will, you know, successful both in mind and in monetary dollars. Fortunately, right now, especially with the ACA coming on, we're going to need more primary care docs. Now, I'm in a specialty, I know, but we need more primary care docs. And right now, if you look, especially in rural Minnesota, there are tons of ways that communities are getting together to fund primary care physicians to be in their communities. And we see that every day in the med school. And we see different ways of financing that can happen. It can be state money, it can be county money, it could be even city, alone city money. Military is still an option, especially National Service Corps. So when people are sitting down saying what kind of practice they have, are you willing to, even though you may not like being in the military, even though you may not want to do those things, is it something that you can do for a temporary time, for a period of time, to see that you get your footing? I remember when I was a fellow here, one of my co-fellows, he was going up to Fargo. There wasn't a Sanford up there. There was barely, what was it, Maricare up there, and they needed an ENT doc. And they needed an ENT doc very badly, and when you have needs and you're badly needing them, the reimbursement goes up. So he got a very healthy contract to go there. Now, was he chasing dollars? No, he's actually from Fargo, so it worked out for him well. But the thing is,
nice.
I think when I sit down and talk to Res, I say, you're going to have a burden. You have a monetary burden on you. Try and find a way doing something you love to do so it's not a strain on you and your family. Because remember, if you look in medicine, not only the monetary reimbursement and where things are going, you look at the divorce rates of our folks, it goes up a little bit once you get out of school because now somebody's been supporting you, and now, you know, for one reason or another, you know, there's this little unraveling that happens. So that's something you have to do. You have to think about yourself and your family. So the biggest thing is if you're career-driven, you know, look for a way to take advantages of your strengths. If you're not career-driven and you just want to have a nice practice, do that. There's places in the Twin Cities, there's places across the country that you can settle into a nice practice, provide the care you want, and not be, you know, the big academician that we're trying to push here at the University of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I just want to thank you so much for being with us here today, and especially thank you for your service. If people have more questions about your background and some of the things you've learned along the way, or they have questions about military service, what would be the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Well, obviously, if you can just Google anybody nowadays, but I'm at the university, and probably I'm checking emails all the time. So you can email me, and I give out my email. It's the university email. So it's hamla hamler001@umn.edu. So it's Hamler, like my name, just drop the R and 001.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again so much for joining us, General Hamler. We'll look forward to speaking with you and checking in at some point. And if you are a physician wanting to tell your story, you're grappling with tough issues and want to get on a soapbox for a few minutes, I'd enjoy sharing your story in the next Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Make sure to contact me at dave@daviddeniston.com or on my website, daviddeniston.com/physicians. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Deniston. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and check in again soon. Have a